If you would open up your Bibles to Exodus chapter 3, Exodus chapter 3 will be where we're getting the lesson from. I appreciate the invitation to be here. As Wayne mentioned, I know him very well, very, very, very fond of Wayne. He apparently has been bragging on me this week, so as you know, we did study together, and I gotta say, if the sermon stinks, it's all his fault. You just blame him. He trained me. I appreciate the invitation to be here. Always great to be able to preach the gospel, meet new people, and make new connections. I know some people from being there in Little Rock that are family to y'all, so it's good to get to know you and make those connections. I definitely look back in fondness to that summer. That was a special time in my life. I proposed to my wife that summer and got to get to know her family, who was attending the congregation that Wayne was preaching at there when we studied together. So it was like drinking from a water hose when studying with Wayne. We certainly did cover the whole Bible, maybe not as in-depth on every part of it, but it was intense. I definitely enjoyed every bit of it and look back on those memories fondly. And it's so good to be with him. And I still remember getting to go and eat lunch with him just about every day. And Linda making us lunch pretty much every day. So that was always a treat and always nice. I'm indebted to them and so grateful to be with them again. I know Wayne is a pretty balanced preacher, so this may not apply to y'all as much as everywhere else. But, I've grown up in Churches of Christ, and there's a lot of hard-hitting sermons. And I like hard-hitting sermons. I've grown fond of them. I like to be convicted. I assume you probably are no different here. But a lot of places, you don't get too many uplifting sermons to make you feel like you can actually accomplish what you need to do. And a lot of times, there's this feeling of inadequacy that goes behind a lot of Christians. Maybe they feel like, I'm not good enough, or I can't do that. Oftentimes when I preach sermons like this, I ask you to raise your hand if you've ever wondered, am I good enough to go to heaven? And every time I ask the question, pretty much everyone has wrestled with that question, at least at some point in time in their life. And I've got to say, God can use us in pretty amazing ways, but a lot of times we limit ourselves. And we make excuses. So we're going to look at a passage in Exodus and see Moses having that same exact feeling here in Exodus chapter 3. If you would, we're going to be reading this. So if you would open up your Bibles to Exodus chapter 3 and follow along. We're going to do quite a bit of reading, but we'll go through it pretty quickly. Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest at Midian. And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness. And he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire in the midst of the bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. And the Lord saw, and he said, and he turned aside and said to him, God called him out of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. He said to him, here I am. Verse 5, then he said, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place in which you're standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have come down, and I've heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians, and to bring them out of that land to a good and broad land. The land flowing of milk and honey, the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now behold, the cry of the people of Israel have come to me, and I have seen the oppression with which my people, the children of Israel, or my people, the Egyptians oppressed them. Verse 10, come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and bring the children out of Egypt? And he said, but I will be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you when you have brought the people out of Egypt, and you shall serve God on this mountain. All right. The lesson tonight is, who am I? Can God use me? I think a lot of children of God feel a lot like Moses a lot of times when we're called to do the work of God. You're sitting here, maybe sitting here wondering the same kind of question that Moses asked. Who am I that I should go? Little old me. We're not in that big of a town. Searcy is maybe not the smallest town in Arkansas, but you may be thinking to yourself, you know, I can't make that much of a big impact. Yeah, I'm not even sure my vote counts in the election, that it doesn't matter who I vote for. And I don't have any political clout. I don't have any power. I don't know. Maybe we have somebody here who's has some sort of position of power. But for the most part, you may be thinking to yourself, you know, I'm not really super wealthy. I don't have a lot of pull. Really, what I do in this life doesn't have a big impact. I'm not like Moses. I can't lead a huge political revolution and lead a people out of a country and do great, amazing things that are going to be written about from time to time. And when we read the Bible and we hear the stories in the Bible, we think, yeah, but I'm just in a relatively small town and I don't have any pull. I don't have any power to actually affect big change or to do anything great. And I think we'll see the excuses that tend to come after that. And Moses makes a few excuses, and we'll see the line of excuses that he makes here. So we're going to look at that question and explore that topic of who am I? Can God actually use me to do great things in my life? So the number one mistake that I think he makes here is that he's not focused on what God can do. He's focused on my own personal limitations. Who am I? That's the question he asks. He doesn't ask, who are you, a great God that can do anything that you want? So we've got to change that about ourselves. We've got to focus more on what God can do and not make it all about what I can do. And if we'll do that, we won't be making some of these excuses that we tend to make that keep us from doing the right things and keep us from doing potentially really great things in the kingdom of God. So let's go ahead and keep on. Well, first of all, what we say is that's the question there. Who am I? He asks. And a lot of you may feel that very same way in the audience tonight, that you may feel like you can't make a big impact in the world. But with God, all things are possible. We can do all things through him who strengthens us. And we need to actually believe that. But let's go ahead and keep on reading where we left off there in verse 13. Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? Now stop there really quick. Only a preacher can do that. Read one verse and then tell you to stop. But you notice he's already starting with the hinting at the fact that he's going to start making excuses. Like, you know, he doesn't come out and make the excuse, but he's like, well, what if this happens? What if they don't? You know, what if they're going to ask me about all this? Well, maybe they're not going to believe me so much. You can already see that starting to come out there. Pick back up there in verse 14. And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me to you. And God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. And this is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob has appeared to me, saying, I have observed you and what has been done for you in Egypt, and I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt and the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they will listen to your voice, and to the elders of Israel shall go up to the king and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. And after that, he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sights of the Egyptians when you go. You shall not empty, but each woman shall ask their neighbor and any woman who lives in her house for silver, gold, jewelry, and for clothing. And you shall put them on your sons and your daughters, and you shall plunder the Egyptians. Verse 1. Then Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, the Lord did not appear to you. Now let's stop right there. What we see here is the first excuse. Moses says, what he's saying here is, I believe in you, God. I know that you can do whatever you say you're going to do, but I just don't believe that I'm capable of doing what you're asking me to do. That goes back to that first statement that he had made back in chapter 3 in verse 11, that who am I that I should go? The doubt he's putting on is himself. He thinks, I'm not going to be able to do it. And as I mentioned earlier, the focus is clearly not on what God is capable of doing, but on what our natural limitations are and what our position is. And I got to say, if you look at it in its context, Moses might be pretty afraid to go back to Egypt. He left in kind of a disgraceful manner. He actually killed somebody. He may be thinking, I'm a wanted man. Who am I? I'm not in a position of all people to go back to Egypt. Yes, I may have family connections, but they might be very mad at me. They might be wanting to put me to death. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know if he's going to be well received. There's lots of reasons and rationale as to why he might be able to talk him out of saying, well, somebody else might be better suited for this job. And if you actually look at what was being said here, if you notice how I was trying to emphasize when I was reading the text, the way that God introduced this whole topic to him back in chapter 3, he said, I know their sufferings. I have come to deliver them. They're my people, and I'm going to do the work. Over and over again, you hear that word. I have seen their suffering. I have seen this, and I'm going to do it. And he even takes it out and explains it after Moses gives his little waffling there. He kind of says, oh, well, what should I say if they're not necessarily going to believe me? And then, as if that wasn't good enough there, God telling him his plan and saying, I'm going to do all the work, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, wasn't good enough. He kind of questions him on it, and Moses comes back and says, God comes back and says to Moses, well, this is exactly what's going to happen. They're not going to, the people will listen to you, but Pharaoh won't listen to you at first until I make him listen. And God very specifically tells them, I'm going to do this. And he tells them it's going to work because I'm going to take care of it and I'm going to do that. And then that's when Moses' excuse comes in here at chapter 4, verse 1. He says, but they're not going to believe me or listen to my voice. They're not going to listen to me. It's not going to work. But that's a fallacy. This idea that I believe in you, I know that you're powerful enough. It's not you, God, it's me. I'm the one who's not good enough. I've done, you know, too many bad things or too many complicated things in my past. I'm just not capable of doing good things for you. I'm not capable of doing big things for you because of what's happened. And they're not going to believe me. You're not the problem, God. You're great. I know you can do awesome things, but we tell ourselves that, don't we, sometimes, that I'm just maybe not capable. That's not in my wheelhouse. And we can come up with all sorts of excuses. And really, what it boils down to is this very line of thinking that I believe God can do anything, but I can't do anything. I'm just too small and too little. But God can choose to use whoever he wants. He can do amazing things. We see that over and over again throughout the Bible. This story is no different. And I think by the end of the lesson, we'll see that's true for us as well. Let's go ahead and keep on reading there, picking right back up there in verse 2. And the Lord said to him, what is in your hand? He said, a staff. And he said, throw it on the ground. So he threw it on the ground and it became a serpent. Moses ran from it, but the Lord said to Moses, put your hand and catch it by the tail. And he put out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand, that they may believe that God, the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared to you again. And the Lord said to him, put your hand inside your cloak. And he put his hand inside his cloak. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous like snow. And God said to him, put your hand back inside your cloak. And he put his hand back inside his cloak. And when he took it out, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. If they do not believe you, God said, or listen to the first sign, they may believe the latter sign. If they will not believe even these two signs, listen to your voice, and you shall take, back to verse 9. If they will not believe even these two signs or listen to your voice, you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it to the dry ground, and the water that you take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. Verse 10, here comes the but. But Moses said to the Lord, "Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." And the Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Therefore, go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak." And he said, "Oh, my Lord, please send somebody else." And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And he said, "Is there not Aaron, or your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with you in your mouth. And with his mouth, I will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. And take in your hand this staff with which you shall do the signs." So as if all those other reasons God gave to Moses weren't good enough, basically telling him what the plan was to begin with, saying that I'm going to take care of it. Then whenever Moses questions it, he goes into further explanation to try and calm him down and let him know, no, I'm actually going to take care of it. And this is exactly what's going to happen, how it's going to take place. Moses still has his doubts. He basically comes straight out, as we saw at the beginning of the chapter, and says, "Oh, they're not going to believe in me. It's not you, God, it's me." And then he tries to use another excuse there in verse 10. "Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent. You know, I'm just not cut out for it. That's not my skill set. Somebody else would be better suited for that job. Somebody else can take care of that. Somebody else would be better at that. That's just not me. I'm not good at that kind of thing." We kind of make those sorts of excuses, don't we, when it comes to serving God? That, "Oh, pass the buck off to somebody else." But there are tons of reasons why we could ever think of not doing something. And what we have to do is decide that doing God's will is more important than us being a little bit uncomfortable, making ourselves uncomfortable. And really, what it boils down to is that's what it boils down to. We see that. He has no more excuses and he runs out. I just love that part there, verse 13. He just basically breaks down and shows what the real reason is. "I just don't want to do it. Please send somebody else. I just really don't like that. Please." That's the real reason. "I just don't want to go. It's going to make me really uncomfortable. I don't want to do this. This isn't me. It's not what I like to do. It's going to be uncomfortable for whatever reason." Maybe he is scared. But we have to determine that the fear of failing isn't as important as actually trying, as actually doing what God would have us to do. And if we really believe that God is capable of doing anything, that middle argument, that little middle line, that second point that I made, it really is fallacious. Because if God can do anything, he can use you. And if we keep telling ourselves, "Oh, well, I'm just not good enough, we're really contradicting ourselves. Because if we believe God can do anything, he can use us to do that anything. So we've got to stop making so many excuses, especially when it comes down to the real reason behind our excuses. We have to realize that there's some things that we just don't want to do. And then that's really what Moses is getting at here. So I want to shift gears and go to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. How does this apply to you and me? Like I said at the beginning of the lesson, you may not feel like you're that important or that you have that much power, that you can really make a big sweeping change. And so God may also not be talking to us directly. He's talking to us through his word, certainly. But we may have lots of excuses we can come up with why we're not going to actually do things that could end up being big things that could impact people greatly, or really making an effort to reaching out to the lost, or doing things that could make a big impact in his kingdom. But God uses a lot of people, and I think he can use you and he can use me, just like he used Moses in a big way. Because at the beginning, Moses didn't think he could do it either. He thought, "Oh no, you got the wrong guy here." And he really didn't even want to do it, to be honest. But he ended up doing it. And I got to say, I told you to move on. I forgot this point. He obviously showed quite a bit of faith. I don't know about you. I'm not a snake person, but I wouldn't like to grab a snake by the tail. He was obviously afraid of it when he first grabbed it too. So maybe some of you are, and even still, I wouldn't want to grab it by the tail. I'd want to make sure I got it to where it couldn't bite me. But clearly Moses showed some faith that he actually does end up going ahead and going through with it. And we know the end of the story, that he does end up leading the people and doing a great deed. And I think we can do amazing things too. Even if you may be thinking, sitting there telling yourself, well, I don't think that I'm really in a position to be able to do anything big or anything great for God. Hebrews chapter 11, we have the Hall of Faith. Starting there, if you would, in verse 23, by faith, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Now, stop right there. The question, who does God use? Well, clearly here, God used Moses' parents. That none of this whole story would have been possible if his parents didn't hide him to begin with. That he was supposed to be killed. And we know the story. They loved him too much. They floated him down the river. And he became a part of Pharaoh's house for a time. And they took care of him. And he was able to live. And I got to say, I don't think Moses' parents realize what God had in store for Moses when they did this. They're just thinking, it is wrong to kill a baby. It's wrong to kill our little baby. We're not going to do it. They're just focused on doing the right thing. And so I think God uses people who don't even realize they're being used. God uses people to do big things in his kingdom. Big things. And I don't think they had this in mind. I don't think they thought political revolution, he's going to lead God's people. He's going to part the seas. He's going to do all these awesome things. He's going to be written and immortalized in the scriptures for us to remember for all times. I don't think that that's what they're thinking of in this moment. They're just thinking, this isn't right. I love my baby. I'm not going to kill it. And God used this one action. Without this, none of this story we wouldn't even be talking about it tonight. None of this would have ever happened. And so sometimes just doing the little things, doing the right thing, can end up being way bigger in the future than what we realized initially. If we keep on reading there in verse 24, we see by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing to be mistreated by the people with the people of God than enjoying the free pleasures of sin. And if you skip down to verse 27, by faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, and for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. And verse 28, by faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled blood so that your story of the firstborn might not touch him. And verse 29, by faith the people crossed the Red Sea on dry land. Even though maybe Moses didn't buy all in really quickly, you know, he's staring at a burning bush. This is a miraculous feat. This is impossible. He's talking to a burning bush, and he recognizes right in front of me, God can do anything. This thing that he's doing right in front of me right now is impossible. He waffles for a while. He makes excuses. He tries to talk God out of asking him to do this. But ultimately, what do we see? He had faith. He acted by faith. He grabbed the snake. He did the signs. He led the people out. He parted the seas. So my next point is, God uses people who have faith in him. And really, that's all it takes. If you're willing to do what God says to do, because you have faith and believe that he can do anything through you, if you're just willing to serve him, you're going to be able to do big things. And if we're able to just do the right thing, I believe it's possible for us to do big things that you may not even be able to foresee. Let's keep on reading. If you would, look down at verse 31. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. My next point is, God uses those who are unexpected. We have a woman here, Rahab, who will forever be remembered as the harlot. You can't say Rahab without thinking the harlot. Her past was messed up. She did some bad things. And a lot of times we tell ourselves, Well, I just can't do it. I'm not best suited for that job. Somebody else. I've done so many bad things. I don't have a good reputation. There's tons of reasons, tons of rationale, tons of excuses that we can just come up with to say, oh, God's not going to use me for that, or God can't use me for that. But God here puts Rahab the harlot in the hall of faith for doing the right thing. That if we do the right thing, God can use any one of us. And as we see in Matthew, she winds up in the lineage of Christ. That part of his plan of salvation involves Rahab, the harlot, somebody with a terrible reputation. And if we're not afraid of maybe a little ridicule for the things that we've done in the past, and we're willing to own up to that and change as we see and live by faith, as it says here, we can do great things in the kingdom. It may not happen in your lifetime. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. But God uses people who may think that they're unusable. Moses thought that. Moses said, who am I? He says, I'm not good at speaking. God, if God can use Rahab, God can use anyone here, no matter what your baggage may be, no matter what you may have done in the past. If you live by faith, God can use you for great things. And that may be a scary prospect to step out on the limb or to turn your life around like that. But again, if you determine that serving God is more important than your fear, and you have a little faith that he can do anything in your life, I believe he certainly can. Let's keep on reading there in verse 32. And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power in the fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they may rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking, flogging, even imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep, goats, destitute, afflicted. They were killed with the sword. And mistreated. They were afflicted and mistreated. Verse 38. Of whom the world was not worthy, wandering around in deserts, mountains, and dens of the earth. All these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what is promised. And since God had provided something far better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. Here we see a long list of names, and we don't have time to go through every single one of them. He didn't have time to write about every single person. There's a lot of people throughout history that, just like this list of people, did all sorts of great things, but I don't know their names. They're lost to history. Nobody knew what they did. And they weren't. These few people were selected to be written down in the Bible, but everybody else who did good things, did right things, we have no idea about them. And you may be thinking, you know, who am I? I'm just a small town person from Arkansas. I can't do great things in the kingdom. Anything that I do is not going to greatly impact God. But as we've seen in this lesson, we may not be fighting crazy wars and putting foreign armors to flight and shutting the mouths of lions, but we can enforce justice. We can do the right thing, simply make the choice not to do something that's evil and wrong, and you never know what may be happening in our lives. Just like Rahab, who through her descendants came Christ eventually. If we're willing to just serve him faithfully, God can use us in big ways. And I'll give you some examples. Don't you know of just some guy who maybe when they were in school, like middle school, haven't you heard those stories where he invites his buddy to come to church and eventually that guy becomes a Christian? And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's married and he has kids and he has grandkids. And now he's an elder in the church and his children and his grandchildren, some of them are preachers, and the list goes on and on. You have no idea what just faithfully living for Christ can do. And you have no idea what kind of an impact that can have. So we may not be in some big war or There may not be miracles going all around us. We may not be asked to lead a political revolution. But if we just live by faith, you have absolutely no idea how eternity could be affected by you. Something you said to somebody, something, a little act of kindness or reaching out to the gospel with somebody. That could reach somebody, that could send shockwaves through the kingdom of heaven and produce generations of Christians. And maybe one of those people will be in a position to do something great. Some of these people were lost to history. Their names aren't mentioned here at the end of this point. And it says, of whom the world is not worthy. I imagine there's some in this audience who have been affected by somebody who just simply did the right thing. And if you're willing to do the same for others, if you're willing to pay that forward, God could use you for awesome things, even if you don't see it right now. I forgot to put that up. God uses those who are forgotten. Sometimes those people are forgotten to history. We don't. Why? I remember this studying with Wayne back in the day. He says, okay, what's the name of your great-grandfather? Maybe you can give that answer. Maybe you know it. Maybe you don't. Okay, what's the name of his father? And unless you look it up on the ancestry thing, you're not going to probably remember the names. You can go, once you go back a certain number of generations, you'll probably be forgotten to history. And I don't mean that in a disillusioning way. We live in unprecedented times right now. We're not really persecuted too much. It's relatively easy to be a Christian. And it's really easy to become content and to make excuses. But staying faithful is really important. Even if we're going to be forgotten to history, even if nobody remembers your name years from now, very few people are remembered by 5 or 6 generations. You may not be remembered, you may not be immortalized, but in the kingdom, you can make big changes. You can do big things. So don't tell yourself, who am I? Don't say, I can't do anything. I believe in God, you can do anything, but I'm just not good enough. And don't tell yourself, don't make excuses. Don't really accept either the ultimate end of the excuse that I just really don't want to do it. If we're willing to do it, God can use us for great things. I appreciate your attention. If you would, just turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. I have one last verse I'd like to share with you. 2 Timothy chapter 2, here we see an idea that God is going to use us one way or the other. Just like God used Pharaoh in a bad way, the choice ultimately depends upon you as to how God's going to use you. Whether we refuse him, whether we make excuses and don't do what he's asked us to do, whether we decide, I think you can do it, or, send somebody else, I just really don't want to do it. God's going to use us one way or the other. You could either be used for the good, like Moses, or for the bad, like Pharaoh. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 20, it says, in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but of wood and clay, some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. Like I say, God's going to use us one way or the other. You can choose to be a vessel for honorable use, or you can choose to be a vessel for dishonorable use. The ball is in your court. God has called you to do great things in his kingdom. You have opportunities every day you may not even realize are opportunities. And you may be telling yourself it's because I'm just not that great of a person. But God can do amazing things from you. If you're willing to set yourself apart, if you're willing to strive to be holy as he is holy. The idea here is like good dishes or paper plates. Maybe you have fine china, or your mother or your grandmother has those dishes that nobody's allowed to touch. You probably can't even really wash them with water. They're really special. Don't even dare break them. Probably don't even look at them funny. Those are the special good dishes. But then when everybody just comes over to watch the game or have an informal get together, what do you bust out? The paper plates and the plastic cups. You could just throw those away. You really don't care about them. The choice is up to you, really. How do you want God to use you? God can do amazing things. We've seen that in this lesson, that God can do amazing things with anybody. Really, the choice is you. Do you want to be a vessel for dishonorable use, or do you want to be a vessel for honorable use? You can also choose not to serve him at all, and you can be made a bad example of. Really, the choice is you. And I don't want to demean anybody who's living the small town life. We're moving to Texas, back to Texas, within the next couple months to a small town. Not a lot going on there. I appreciate smaller congregations. This congregation is not so small, but things are going on. Even if you are living a simple life, we're told to aspire to live quiet, simple lives. That's not a bad thing. And sometimes just by doing the everyday grind of living a normal Christian life, God can do great things through that as well. You may not have those same opportunities, but God can use you. What's your excuse? Do you have one? Have you obeyed the gospel? Jesus said, he who believes and is baptized will be saved. He who does not believe will be condemned. If you need to give your life over to God, whether you've been making excuses or telling yourself, I can't do it, I'm not good enough, God is way bigger than our problems. He's definitely big enough to save you. You may not have believed that, but it's true. And it takes faith to believe that. So if you're convicted by that thought, make your life right. Whatever you need to do, please come now. Come as we stand and as we sing.